Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story that you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get across is that this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode's topic is Chirps. Chirps is a short story I published in the 2015 edition of the Pacific Review, a journal based out of San Diego State University. It tells the story of this character who seems to be losing his mind against the backdrop of a smoke detector that won't quit beeping as though it were low on battery. This story, it came to me while I was living in Baltimore. I was living in this apartment for the last 4.5 years or so that I was there, and it all came to me when a smoke detector started going off periodically. And it sounded like a bird, and I remember that, in sort of a really tired state, maybe a tad bit hungover one Saturday morning, hearing in the wee hours of the morning this chirping going on, and actually thinking that somehow a bird may have gotten into my apartment, and going out to look for it, and, you know, pretty quickly figuring out it was a smoke detector. In any event, so I tried to replace the batteries on the smoke detector. That did not fix the problem. Reported it to maintenance. The thing about this apartment in Baltimore is that the maintenance staff, the management in general, were pretty awful. I don't say that lightly. I've worked in enough positions where I'm responsible for managing some of these details that, when someone really just isn't doing their job, it is something that really grates on me, and I think I give a fair amount of grace on that. Just really unresponsive to any kind of requests that I made, and did a lot of kind of shady things in terms of their business practices. So in any event, when they didn't respond to this, notice that this was an issue, I decided, rather than just kind of living with that beeping sound, which was kind of driving me insane, that I would, dismantle the smoke detector myself. After I changed the batteries, that didn't fix it. I even went so far as just to take out the batteries altogether, and still somehow it chirped. I'm not sure what extra power source it may have had within it, but ended up, pulling out some extra wires to finally silence it. So in any event, when I set it down, I noticed that there was this line on the surface of the smoke detector, that at a weird certain angle actually kind of looked like a wing on the side of it, which becomes kind of important to when I started thinking about this story. So I wanted to write something here that was pretty surreal and was kind of rooted in, what I had experienced with the smoke detector and kind of my own, kind of imaginings around it, but taking it a little bit further with all of it. So in this surreal story, it's sort of gradual, but it's not so subtle in its revelation that the smoke detector in the story actually wants to be a bird. It keeps chirping and chirping and chirping, and again, it's kind of driving this protagonist of the story insane. He finally, flings it against a wall, and it cracks, and part of it juts out, and then it, but much less subtly than my own experience, looks like the wing of a bird. And all of this kind of is culminating in kind of the perception that, again, this smoke detector actually wants to be a bird. It's chirping like one, it has a wing like one, he had thrown it, so it sort of took flight. So the story culminates in the protagonist chucking the smoke detector out the window so it can be with the birds outside, and one way or another, it's out of his life. In more or less the same motion concurrently in the story, this character also starts painting his wall, starts painting a mural, and kind of one of the subtexts going on in this story was the character caught in a pretty unhappy relationship and also in an unhappy professional situation, doesn't like his job very much, and that he wanted to be an artist, and he has all these paints that he hasn't been using. So there's sort of some metaphorical levels here about, he's letting the smoke detector be what it wants to be or what it was meant to be against all logic and against all odds. inanimate object that wants to take flight and be a bird, and he, you know, sends it on its way out the window, flying outside, and just saying he's going to be an artist, which is what he's meant to be. Again, against any sort of logic or reason, he's pursuing it and painting this wall, and it's heavily implied that's going to be at the expense of his professional career and most certainly at the expense of his relationship, but he's being what he thinks he was always intended to be. So I think one of the merits of the story in that state is that it does leave some questions in terms of what was real and what he's supposed to do in this story, you know, as if this character really is kind of following his destiny, and if we're to read it as an inspirational tale, or if we're supposed to read it as, you know, completely absurd, and this guy has really gone insane in the process of interacting with this smoke detector and coming back to his art. You know, and I think that that's a good place for this story to end. You know, there's some advice put out by George Saunders, I think it was a few months ago, where he was talking about how in, you know, really strong short stories, we don't know what happened. If you can only read it one way, if there's not room for interpretation and kind of drawing your own stuff from it, that it's not really successful as a story. That's by no means to imply this story arrives at the level of something George Saunders would do, but I think it is one of the ways in which this story does succeed on its own merits, is that it leaves it kind of room for that interpretation based on where the reader might be in her or his life to figure out, you know, whether or not this was the right move or whether it would be the right move for them. And I think you can make a fair read in either direction on that. So for this story, you know, I wrote it while I was in Baltimore, submitted it to a bunch of places, and it was always a relatively low priority because I knew it was a pretty weird story, and I didn't expect it to be published, you know, in a major journal necessarily, but I thought it, you know, could find a home somewhere. But, you know, after a series of rejections and after kind of writing a lot of other stories, this one ended up actually being a relatively low priority for me, and I actually stopped sending it out. I just kind of let it ride with the few places that it was still out at. Lo and behold, Heather and I were on a vacation in Las Vegas, spring break, my first year of my MFA program. And I got an email accepting the story to the Pacific Review. With all due respect to the Pacific Review, I'd actually kind of forgotten I had submitted it there, didn't realize where it was still out. So it was a really pleasant surprise. It was kind of out of nowhere. I did have some other stories out to journals that I was really, you know, crossing my fingers on and hoping about. And it was a really great surprise that this story did find a home, and was pretty happy with the home where it landed. And right about the same time, my friend Z Hitzel posted on Facebook that Z had poems being published with the same journal. So it's a pretty cool thing to have the both of us appear in the same journal. And it's kind of one of my favorite journals now to leaf through, just to see that connection of our very different work, both being featured on that same platform. So, okay. So that in a nutshell is the story Chirps. So we'll move on now to Mike's monthly endorsement. And as a review, as an artist, I think it's important to be consuming other things, to see what interests and inspires you, and to see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, band, wrestling match, or something along these lines that may have escaped a huge mainstream audience, or that may be a little dated and now and at the cusp of being forgotten, that I would like to recommend to you, my listeners. So this month's pick is Blinking Lights and Other Revelations, which is a two-disc album by a band called Eels. Eels had some moderate success in the mainstream with their song Novocaine for the Soul, which was on the radio back, I believe it was the 1990s, may have snuck into the late 1990s or early 2000s. And they're probably better known for their music that's appeared in a few major motion pictures. They had a number of songs featured in the Shrek movies. They recorded Mr. E's Beautiful Blues that was featured pretty prominently in the movie Road Trip with Breckin Meyer and Tom Green and Amy Smart and, you know, that whole cast. So this album, though, Blinking Lights and Other Revelations, came out in 2005. And it's funny because I really discovered the Eels in college with songs like Last Stop, This Town, Fresh Feeling, It's a Motherfucker, all these songs. I think it was Mystery's Beautiful Blues that kind of one by one led me to these other songs. But they came to be kind of one of these bands that, you know, enough people had heard of. They weren't really an obscure band, but at the same time, were also, you know, by no means a mainstream band. They wouldn't really hear them on the radio or anything. So it's interesting, though, that I consider them kind of one of my pet bands during that period in my life. And yet, the same year that I graduated, they released this new album that I somehow entirely missed. It wasn't until a good 3 years later that just kind of over the course of Googling around and listening to YouTube clips that I discovered this album and rediscovered the Eels in general. So I'd moved to Baltimore a few months before and was kind of settling in and had just started running again, and the weather was getting nicer. And I really associate this album with that time in my life when, again, I'd been in Baltimore for a few months, but yeah, was just kind of starting to really kind of find my bearings there and make a home there, to the extent that it was. So it has a lot of really good songs on it. Songs like Losing Streak, which is kind of upbeat Eels at their best. The song Ugly Love, which is also, I think, a great kind of demonstration of the Eels' personality, where, you know, it's a song that's kind of ostensibly sort of a love song, but kind of more about self-love and kind of knowing who you are in a relationship, and that, you know, you're not going to be, as the song says, the greatest catch in a traditional sense. You're going to be someone who's, you know, an individual, you know, take me or leave me. One of my favorite songs, and one of the ones that I keep coming back to more so, you know, in years to follow, and still kind of, you know, will plug in every now and again, now as I'm recording this, you know, a solid 7.5 years later, song The Things the Grandchildren Should Know. It's the last track on the album. That one is really just kind of a cool meditation on a life, and kind of things that you realize as you get older, you know, about kind of going to bed earlier and all the things that you look back on and, you know, not having regrets. Because as much as, you know, some things weren't so fun at the time, recognizing, you know, how important they were and how, you know, those memories kind of shape us in the years to follow. There's also a song on there that I like a good bit that I wanted to point out called Theme for a Pretty Girl That Makes You Believe God Exists. This song is a really interesting one, in part because it's instrumental. There are at least one or two other instrumental tracks on this album, but this one in particular always stuck with me, in part because when I heard it, it just really resonated with me. I got this song, this idea of, you know, meeting a beautiful woman and it feeling like a revelatory experience, whether or not she's someone you're actually going to love or not, just the idea of kind of this person coming into your life. And, you know, whether it's physical beauty or whether it's, you know, someone who you just kind of see can be a friend, or someone who, you know, gets you and kind of sees through to you. Because I think that's a big part of what this whole album is about, is discovering, you know, love on all sorts of different levels, not just romantic. So this idea of kind of just this beautiful little song about that experience of meeting someone who makes life feel worth living at that time, makes you, you know, believe in some sort of design, as the title of the song suggests, makes you believe that God exists. I think it's a really beautiful sentiment. Okay, so that's a wrap for this time's episode. So as always, I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you will check back again. Special thanks, as always, go to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for this show. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.